Good afternoon, and welcome to our session APV5 Performance Tuning and Optimization. When you're presenting at TechEd, there are actually a couple of scenarios you want to try to avoid. One is being at the graveyard shift, what they call it, the final session of the TechEd conference, which is this one. And the second one is to be put up against people like Mark Brzozinovich. So it's a shame that Mark probably has no people in his audience as for now. But by raising hand, could you all please raise your right hand? Could you move it behind your head and tap yourself on the shoulder, because you should compliment yourself for showing up here. Thank you very much. So we will be talking about performance tuning and optimization. And obviously, I was just having a discussion in the introduction when I was walking around with a gentleman over there that performance is always like this gray area if you talk about it. So, you know, what's a good performance? What's a good user experience? So in our session, we will be focusing and we'll be bringing you some independent content. We'll discuss that a little bit later. But I'm interested to see, if, when it comes to performance, because obviously you have an interest in performance, how many of you are actually measuring performance in your environments? So no, a couple of them, like 20% of the people? Okay. So what we see, there are some performance toolings out there, and we will be using some of the tools during this session, and we'll discuss how that specifically works. But our goal is to bring you unbiased, independent information. To be clear, we do not work for Microsoft. This is an independent research project on APV5 performance best practices and tuning. So we have set up three sections in the presentation. We will start with an introduction of the project that we've been doing, the tools that we've been using. Then we will go into some of the APV-related scenarios that we selected. And then we'll wrap up the session with some conclusions and some key takeaways. So on the scenarios topic, how many are actually using APV5 at this moment in your environment? So 80%, okay. Who are doing like a proof of concept or still investigating? Okay. 5-10%, okay. So what we try to do, we try to balance the information in our deck and in our research to cover basically all kinds of scenarios. So we have some information on, you know, regardless of the deployment model you're using, whether it's SCCM, if it's the full infrastructure, or any third-party integration maybe even, we'll be covering some of the information from there. We also have some hosted desktop-specific configuration. So if you're doing VDI, those kind of concepts, we have some information for you. And some publishing and streaming, so that's more on the full infrastructure, or the native infrastructure, as it's called, in APV5. So with this setup, we hope that you all can take something with you when you go back. So my name is Ment van der Plas. I am a Microsoft MVP on APV Technologies. I've been that since 2009. I've worked with the technology even far beyond that, going back to the SoftGrid era. And I've implemented APV and other specific tooling in various enterprises, speaking at several conferences, including this year's TechEd. So we also did this presentation, for example, in Houston. And it was also with Ryan.
Yeah, my name is Ryan Bijkerk. I'm a development manager at Login VSI, where I'm responsible for the development of the product that we have. But before working at Login VSI, I was involved in consultancy and did a lot of APV related stuff, especially sequencing, but also a lot of troubleshooting. So there you have a middle relation with APV and this specific phase of Project VRC. So by raising hands, how many people know who Project VRC is? Okay, 25-30%. So Project VRC is a research project which is done by two big consultancy companies called PQR and Login Consultants. It started in 2009, and the goal of Project VRC is to discover best practices and performance analysis of new technologies, especially focusing on the hosted desktop solutions like VDI, RDSH, stuff like that. So we're independent, we're not getting paid for this, so this is really, we want to deliver all this information to you for the community. Now within Project VRC, we use the product called Login VSI, which is the industry standard of benchmarking. But I will cover that a little bit later. So looking at the journey of Project VRC, we released a couple of white papers. And there are really interesting white papers. So there's stuff like the difference between Windows XP and Windows 7. So what is the performance difference? How can you optimize your VDI environment? But also like researchers to different application virtualization technologies. So there's not only AppVee out there, we also have FinApp. So what's the difference between those two solutions? We have released a white paper on that topic. Another example is antivirus. What will happen if you implement antivirus solution within your VDI environment? It will have a big impact. But how can you also optimize this? And we also released a white paper focusing on the impact of Microsoft Office. And there was some interesting results, because when moving to the latest version of Office, you will lose 20% capacity. Can you imagine if you implement a new version of Office and you lose that kind of capacity in production? So these white papers are just published on the website. You can download them for free. And they can really be used as a guidance. But we have the biggest announcement of TechEd. This is, we released this week a white paper about this specific topic, AppVee 5. So all the results that we're presenting here are also published in this white paper, so you can download them for free. I really recommend to do that. So Login VSI. How many of you know Login VSI? Well, quite a lot. 50%? I'm impressive. There are four main topics, and like already mentioned, Login VSI is the industry standard in benchmarking hosted desktop environments, so focusing really on VDI and RDSH and solutions like Citrix. So the first topic is really at benchmarking itself. This is used by a lot of vendors like Microsoft itself, but also Citrix, Dell, Cisco, and they use our products to validate their own products. And these results are published in white papers by themselves. So we're not involved in the white papers. They really publish for themselves to show and share with customers, but also showing that they are the best. Another topic is capacity planning. So when you're creating an environment, you always have the amount of numbers or users that you want to host on your environment. But yeah, you need a way to validate it. And by using Login VSI, you can really validate that number. So making sure you have scaled your environment large enough to make sure and guarantee that all your users can work as expected. Another one is load and stress testing. We had an interesting case as a Dutch customer. They had a large environment running in a data center. They used Login VSI to put stress on their environment. But the data center had a policy. When the environment is consuming too much power, they just pull the plug. Can you imagine what happened if that was during production time and users will just lose their session? I think then you have a lot of complaints. But luckily, they tested that in a testing setup. And the last topic is change impact prediction. And personally, that is the best topic, because you use change impact prediction also in this VRC. And it's really about validating your changes in your environment. So for example, so upgrading to the latest version of Office, what is the impact of that? Moving around, so using different kind of configuration, what is the impact of that? So how Login VSI does it is by really simulating users. And like you can see here in the video, we log on users, and they will start just using applications like Word, browsing the internet. And what we do, we will add more users and more users, and eventually you will hit your saturation point, but we will cover that a little bit later also. During these user activities, we have specific measurements, and these measurements are used to calculate the overall user experience and also the number that you can run on your environment. So like mentioned, we have a workload, and within this workload, applications are used. So in this case, we have Office, so Outlook, PowerPoint, Word, Excel. We have some PDFs in there, also generating PDFs, FreeMind, which is JAV application, and some Internet Explorer browsing, and 7-zip compression, so creating zip files. And of course, we virtualize a couple of them.
Yeah, so as you can see in this setup, we had also included Microsoft Office. And we had a discussion about that amongst us and also with some of the people in the community and also with the Microsoft product team. Why do you want to include Office? Well, first of all, Microsoft obviously offers some guidance into virtualized Office. For example, Office 2013 can be generated to a sequence on FV4.5. And also, like the Office 365 Pro package is also based on virtualization technology. But on the other hand, it may also not be the best candidate to virtualize or publish dynamically, because over the years we've seen that Office integrates with a lot of business application, and if you isolate an application with virtualization technology, it kind of takes away that integration, so it's kind of hard to do. And it also has many integration points with the operating system, and as you know, since FV5, these integration points are now captured by the sequencer and actually lay down on the local OS. So the number of integration points also results in, you know, more traffic and more resources. So in short, it's a very unique application. But we decided to put it in there because we like it for those characteristics. Although maybe Office is a very specific application, I'm guessing that in your production environment, you have some line of business application that may have similar or some kind of these characteristics as well that don't behave, you know, always on the best possible way, or that have a lot of integration. So that's why we went forward with Microsoft Office in our workload. So let me, like Ryan said, we had login VSI, logging on users, and doing some calculations. So let me, you know, from a high-level perspective, explain how that is happening. So imagine yourself a train car, and in that train car you have a very specific configuration for seating. So in this example, the seating is on the side. We have users ready in our environment, and we start onboarding those users onto the train, right? But we push it really beyond the limit. So when basically no one can enter the car anymore, but we push them on until the saturation point of that server is reached, and the users notice that they are not alone. They're standing, they're queuing, they're up against each other, so there's no real pleasant commute at that point in time. Then we change the configuration, so we change the seating, and we rerun the test, so we onboard those users. Again, we push it beyond its limit, and until the saturation point is reached again. So then we have two different configuration that we've put through the same test, and we can, you know, do some measurements with it. How good was one? How good was the other? And we've captured that in a graph like these ones. This is an example, but you will see these graphs over the rest of the presentation. So in this example, we have a baseline. Let's say that was the first train car that we did. We say that that's 100% capacity, and we tested it in another configuration A, and look at that, there's a positive impact on capacity. So that's actually, from a capacity perspective, a better way. But you can also have like negative impact, like in configuration 3. So apparently this configuration had a negative impact on capacity. So in login VSI, we call this saturation point VSI max, which is basically the maximum amount of users that you can put on the host until like some threshold in measurements is reached. But we not only talk about capacity, we also have some performance counters running in the background, so we can tell you what the resource utilization was of that particular server in the background, because obviously we did not do this with train cards. So we have CPU, we have disk I/O, we have network, and all those kinds of measurements. And actually, we have hundreds of these graphs, and we selected the ones that are interesting or that really show a difference here for you. Otherwise, you would be, yeah, pretty bored, because it would be like a death by PowerPoint, death by graphical presentation. So these are basically the graphs that we will be showing you. Another thing I like to mention about the platform that we are using, this is not your typical laptop kind of Hyper-V environment. This is serious hardware, so we are using Cisco UCS blades, and we have storage, and we have a VMware as a hypervisor, and we separate the infrastructure from the test server. So we are running the load and the capacity configurations on the test server where all the VMs are located. And we have like the AppV stuff, the AppV management server, the publishing server, and the streaming server all located on another server. So we can really isolate those configurations. We are using Server 2008 and our server platform and Windows 7 SP1 as our client platform, primarily because we are doing tests with both FP4.6 as well as FP5, and we try to create like a common platform, and so this is the one we went for. But we also think these are probably the common platforms also so out there. And the last thing I want to mention about our test setup and our configuration is that because of the amount of tests that we do, and the time it takes for such a test, is our infrastructure is fully automated. So all the virtual machines that we create, we recreate after each test. So all the setup, so it's a stateless VDI environment. So all the VMs are refreshed to their original state after each test. And also the host is rebooted to clear any of, you know, any residents there still. And we let it idle for 30 minutes to make sure that when we start the test, it's not still doing some like processing in the background. And also, we apply the law of the large numbers. So we don't do like a single run and, you know, base any conclusion on that. We basically take 10 consecutive runs. We average those results. And because each run takes 24 hours, and that's excluding some of the configuration that we still need because we need to prepare images and configuration changes. And we did like over 50 runs. I think it was even more. So just want to make sure that there's a significant amount of time that is done behind this research. So the results that we've shown you, I think they are they're based on a very solid test method. So we're going to talk about the various scenarios of AppV. So this is kind of the meat of the presentation, right? This is why you're here for. So you should pay attention to the topic that you're interested in. But before I start, I just wanted to make sure that because of the number of configurations and the alterations that we have, we selected a certain baseline, a certain default that we will be using, and we will deviate from it as mentioned. So our default, for example, is user publishing. We pre-added the applications into the image. We didn't publish it, and we didn't mount it. We basically registered the application. We used shared content store as our default configuration, HTTP as the streaming protocol. Our packages were by default fault streamed and installed into the primary virtual application directory, which is kind of I think that's pretty much, most of them are basically the best practices of either, you know, the community or Microsoft. But we have all the alterations as well, as mentioned here. So we focused on AppV5 Service Pack 2, and that was primarily because most of these tests that we've executed were done in the first half of the year. Microsoft released Hotfix 4. In around the May timeframe when we were actually in Houston. And because that one was focused on performance specifically, we decided to test Hotfix 4 as well. So we have some results from that. But we didn't do any tests afterwards. We basically finished up the white paper. So any of the newer hotfixes are not in here. And obviously, this is something you can do on and on and on because Microsoft keeps releasing new versions, of course. And as we said, we are not paid to do this. This is something we do in our free time. And there's other stuff we like to do in our free time as well, as you can imagine.
So let's go to the first scenario, which is local cached. Ment and I had a lot of discussions, and what we want to find is truly the true impact of application virtualization. And the closest scenario towards just native installed applications is the local cache. So in this scenario, no streaming is involved. We added the applications in the golden image and then distributed over the entire VDI pool. So let's go to the results. So our baseline in this scenario is just the native installed applications, our 100%. And if we introduce application virtualization and an AppV 4.6, we can see that there's 8% impact. This means that you will lose 8% capacity in your environment when using AppV 4.6. So the first test that we did with AppV 5 were 84%. And we're really like, what is going on? Because this is not as we expected. So Looking in the charts, and especially the CPU utilization, you can clearly see here there's something really going wrong. We have our fully automation, so all the hypervisors rebooted, the complete state of the VMs is reset, we have enough time for each machine to boot up, to get idle, and still at the beginning of the test we see 100% CPU utilization of FV5. So there should be something in there what is causing a real extreme high load. And also if we look at the disk writes, you can see that there's a huge offset in activity in the FV5 scenario. So we really deeped in what was going on, and we found out that this has something to do with .NET, and especially 4.0. It's only 4.0. But .NET has an optimization services running in the background, which will make sure that the application experience is better, that the whole application will start smoothly. But somehow, this optimization will consume a lot of resources. And because our machines is resetted to the original state, because we're running stateless, this optimization took every time, every test run that we did, we had the same high load. And that was because of the machines were getting idle, so the task scheduler kicked in and run the optimization. So there's a script there that can force this optimization so you can apply this within your golden image before you distribute it over your environment. So we did that and we saw that there was a better improvement in there. Still, there is one thing I want to say. There are unexplainable peaks in the beginning. Somehow, in both scenarios, so this is for FV4.6 and FV5, with the .NET optimization, we have in the beginning of a test a peak, and we don't know why. But they won't influence the overall results because there's enough room left in the CPU utilization. Also, looking at the disk activity, again, the same peak, same way, is not influencing the results. But you can see with the .NET optimization, the disk activity is better. It's just the same as FV4.6. So now looking to the overall capacity impact, we already know that FV4.6 has an 8% impact. And with the .NET optimization, we see that FV5 has 13% impact. So does somebody has an idea why FV5 is heavier? No?
No, it's Friday afternoon.
Ah, okay. So we think that it's caused by the heavy integration. Because FV5 is more tighter to the operating system, it will consume more resources. So wrapping this up, if you introduce application virtualization in general, it will always affect your overall capacity numbers. Application virtualization is in the layer between your operating system and the application itself, but it has many other benefits. Because FV5 has more integration points, it's a little bit more heavier. Within the results, we have unexplainable peaks, and the peaks will remain in all the other results. It's a returning thing, but they won't influence the overall capacity numbers. So our recommendation, and it has nothing to do with FV5, is always optimize your .NET framework, especially in a hosted desktop environment. Because, as you have seen, it can have a huge impact on your resources.
Yeah, so there was definitely something at the start of our research that came up. It was, we thought it was pretty interesting. How many of you know that there's this resource-intensive .NET optimization? Okay, some of you, like 5%. So we were very surprised, and I'm actually glad that Microsoft put it into the best practices guidelines that come with the product. So before I go into register staging, just want to make sure that we are with a small crowd here. So if you have any questions in between based on the results, don't hesitate to ask. We'll be happy to repeat your questions. You don't have to wait up till the end. I think we have plenty of time. We did this run at the previous TechEd as well, so we have like 10, 15 minutes. So gentlemen, yes?
Did Microsoft comment on this peak in the beginning we would see with 4.6
So the question is, does Microsoft comment on the peak? Yes, we've had several calls with them. They also couldn't figure out why it was happening, and they took that back to their own labs to try to reproduce that issue. And like you saw on the graphs, the weird thing was, because it happened both in 4.6 and FV5, we were like, okay, this is something like, do they share something, or is this something else happening on our host? But it didn't show up in the local installation. So, how many of you know what registry staging is? Okay, nobody? Okay, that's good. Then I'll explain it a little bit. Registry staging is part of the publishing process. And what happens, basically, the registry that's part of the package gets extracted into the local operating system as part of the tighter integration that FV does. It runs as a background thread, and so as I said, it's by default scheduled to be delivered at publishing. But it can produce some significant CPU, obviously, because you start integrating with the operating system. Microsoft has an option to do the registry staging on demand or delayed, so that it doesn't do it at publishing, but it does it at application startup. And that's particularly beneficial if, for example, you have a large amount of applications and you only use a few, like on a regular base, because then you don't get the hit of all the applications that you're not starting, only the ones that you start. So it's specifically for those scenarios and also in the non-persistent. So Stephen Thomas from Microsoft has a great blog explaining this and how you can set it. So we decided to test this out in our environment and see if we find the same performance benefit as he described. And we do that basically in two scenarios, because registry staging is part of the, if you do the local cached scenario, like we just explained, but it's also applicable in the streaming scenario, which we'll discuss shortly. So in the local cached scenario, we see around 4% impact on capacity. So the capacity is reduced a little bit if you enable a registry staging to be delayed. If you apply that to the streaming scenario, the impact is a little bit higher. Now, I just want to mention here that the streaming graph, we don't want to spoil yet. We don't want to give a spoiler already of the streaming impact, so this one is 100%. But the relative impact is 7%. If we look at some of the resource graphs, we see that there's a small negative impact on CPU if we disabled it. And there's a positive impact on writes, specifically in the streaming scenario, where you can see that the default streaming behaviors, which delivers the bits dynamically to the client, and background registry staging disabled, has a small offset. So we think, so our conclusions are that registry staging does have a small negative impact on CPU and capacity. It has a positive impact on write I/O, especially in streaming scenarios. But we couldn't really find that proof of that performance enhancement. And we were discussing this also with the product team, is why don't we see that? And I think because Microsoft recommends to disable it in VDI environments, we think that it's due to the fact that we have only four applications in our environment, or four packages, and we use all of them in the workload. So whether or not you do it at publishing or you do it delayed, it doesn't really, you don't get the performance gain. It's more likely if we would have 100 applications and we would use only four, then you probably see that there's a positive impact there. So you can disable registry staging with a small trade-off in capacity. Be sure to know that.
So let's go to the next topic, which is shared content store. With the introduction of FV5, they added a feature called shared content store. It's really focusing on the hosted desktop environment, so VDI and RDSH. So this is going to be our first real streaming scenario, so you're going to also see the impact of streaming. But the difference with shared content store is, in a traditional way of streaming, the application will be cached locally to the disk. If you enable shared content store, the application still will get published, but when launching the application, the package will get streamed, but it won't get cached on the local disk. So if we're going to look at the charts, we can see that when we compare it to locally cached, we see that streaming with shared content store enabled has 14% impact. So streaming has an overhead. But if we're going to look at the traditional way of streaming, so where the package is going to be locally cached on the disk, we see we have a 30% impact, which is quite high. If you lose 30% capacity in your environment, and you don't have a large environment or you cannot host the users anymore, you're going to be in a problem. So looking at the disk activity and especially the reads, we can see that because the application is not cached locally on the disk, there's a benefit when using shared content store streaming. So you have less read activities. But if you look at the write activities, you can see in the traditional way, because the packages are cached locally, it has a huge impact on your disk layer. So there's a lot of write activities in there in the traditional way of streaming. And the funny thing is, because if we look at the CPU utilization, you can see that in the local cache scenario and in the streaming with shared content store, the CPU utilization is hit 100%. But the traditional way, the default way of streaming, doesn't. Because it was the first time we hit a storage bottleneck in our environment. Usually we had always had the bottleneck was always related to the CPU. But with enabling streaming in the traditional way, we had it on the disk layer. Another thing that we also have captured is the total throughput on the streaming server itself. And this is also interesting because you can see when enabling shared content store, there is less streaming throughput on the streaming server. So it's beneficial for your network activity when enabling shared content store. But I have one note for that. Because we're running in a stateless environment, the state is refreshed. The packages in a local cache, you may have more benefit on the long run if you have a stateful environment. Because then the package is already on the system and there's no streaming involved anymore, and then the throughput will go down. But it was not our focus, and we're only focusing on stateless. So streaming has an impact on the CPU, but the traditional way of streaming where the packages are cached locally has a huge impact on the write I/O. So with shared content store, you can reduce that, and you also will reduce the network activity and the throughput on your streaming server itself. So Microsoft recommends to use shared content store in hosted desktop scenarios for performance reasons, and based on our results, we strongly recommend that. It's a best practice to do it. But in a stateful or a persistent environment, it may be more beneficial to use the traditional way where the packages are cached locally.
So with introducing streaming, another concept that AppV has is publishing. And we talked about that a little bit already. And it basically is based on the fact that you have a clean desktop and the user logs on for the first time and the metadata of the application is actually registered in the machine, like shortcuts and file types and those kind of things, right? So the user can then start the application and it gets streamed to the client, either cached or maybe shared content store with AppV5. Well, the discussion with publishing is that before the applications are delivered, the user cannot do anything. So if you have a pristine environment, the applications have to be delivered in a fast way. Otherwise, the user will doesn't get a very good user experience. So this is kind of where you're touching on the gray area of what is actually an acceptable publishing time. How long may that take? And I'm interested to see how many of you would say 5 minutes is okay. Okay, nobody between 4 and 5 minutes? 3 and 4 minutes? Nobody? 2 and 3 minutes? 1 and 2 minutes? Yeah, one hand, two hands, three hands. Under a minute? Okay. Didn't see all hands, so the rest is like 0 seconds or something? could be. We kind of had the same idea. We were a little bit more relaxed. We thought that everything between like 30 seconds and 2 minutes would be acceptable, depending on the amount of applications, of course. Especially if you compare it, for example, to traditional installation. Imagine yourself a VDI environment where you had to actually physically deliver MSIs to. That would take, I wouldn't get full hands with 5 minutes if we can do that in 5 minutes. But obviously, this technology was designed to deliver that in a fast way. So we will show you the results that we've seen. We will not judge whether it's long or slow or anything. But the challenge we had is that Microsoft doesn't offer actually any reporting on the publishing times. Well, this is a very, I think, very critical component in user experience. So while researching, actually Ryan got this, you know, good idea, which he developed through a tool, which you can download on his website. It's still in beta, that actually goes out to the virtual machines or to the machines that you've registered. It grabs the event log information and it can generate the, generate the publishing times for you. And you can, it creates some interesting graphs, some examples we have here in this slide. So for example, a stacked diagram of what's the total publishing time and which application used the most, or how is it divided between the applications. Which are the most frequent used packages in your environment. And also, and that's actually what we'll be talking about later, the average publishing times per application. Because obviously, you want to improve publishing times, you start with the one that takes the longest, because, you know, that's the low-hanging fruit, so to speak. So in this particular example, it's the green one, which is FreeMind. I don't know how it got so high, but apparently in your environment, it took so much time. So I definitely encourage you to check out that site and download the tool if you have a native infrastructure of EPFI. So coming back to the test that we've did, in the first one, on a single machine with a server that is not under load, we had a publishing time of 32 seconds. So, well, the first thing is that's between 30 seconds and a minute, so you all should be happy with it. But the second thing to mention here is that there's one application dominating the publishing time pretty much, which is Microsoft Office. And obviously, as I mentioned before, Office has been under debate also with the product team because, yeah, this doesn't look very good, right? So, okay, why does Office take so long and how can we fix that? So we will, while we move further, you know, show you some of the optimizations that we've done if we can get those times a little bit lower. But in this case, it's Microsoft Office, but it can also, in your situation, maybe this particular line of business application that maybe even takes 2 minutes to publish, right? This is just an example. And the second thing I like to mention is that we notice that the first application that gets published has some additional overhead because, you know, authentication and some of the AppV subsystems have to be started up because Adobe Flash was actually the smallest package in our configuration and it took like 6 seconds. So that's something to take into account as well. So if we want to optimize publishing, do you have any ideas? What are the alternatives that we have? What can we do to optimize it? Throw it out. Anything? Are you admins? Sequencers? No idea? Just want to lay back? You want to tell me to tell you? Okay, I'll do that. So we brainstormed a little bit, and we came up with these alterations. So we start with a non-pre-edit package, which is the situation with 100%, and then we started pre-adding the package to the image. Now, pre-adding is a specific command you can run on the client. It doesn't publish the application; it just registers it. It doesn't mount it, so it's not cached or anything. It just registers it. It leverages this the publishing process a little bit. Then we thought, what if we took Office as a virtual application out of the dynamic publishing and put it inside the image before the, so we take away the dynamically publishing and just put it in the image. How does that look? If you put it in the image, you basically are losing the dynamic functionality, obviously, of publishing. So we also try to find some middle ground. And the thing that we come up with is, obviously, Office has a lot of those integration points, but the sequencer captures those and it stores them in the manifest file. And you can, again, disable the subsystems that you don't want. So we saw that in the case of Office, the subsystem of COM was pretty large. So we disabled COM to see, okay, what if we don't register that with the local system? And I don't know if there are applications that need this, but just as a, you know, as an idea. What if we disable that? How does that help us in our publishing times? Then we also tried global publishing. So user publishing is when the user logs on, but the global publishing is on machine-based level. And then also we did the global publishing, but we pre-published the application already to the image. So these are just some thoughts that we've had and we've tested, and maybe there are more. And what we basically expected, if you know that the graph should get slower towards or should get better towards the bottom. We thought global publishing, you know, with pre-published application would be the best. So we expected that graph to go down. So let's see how that worked out. So when we pre-edit the package, which is the best practice for Microsoft for publishing performance, we saw, yeah, it says here 1%, but you can even say, well, we didn't see any real difference. This doesn't really look like it helped a lot. So although you can also argue that it doesn't, you know, cost a lot, but I don't see the actual performance gain here. Obviously, if we added Office into the image, that, you know, that took away 24 seconds out of publishing time. So that's lowered with close to 70%. So that's an idea maybe for some of those applications, if they're dominating your publishing times, to put them in the image. If you want to find that middle ground that we discussed, you can also go by disabling some of the subsystem. Because if you, example, only disabled COM, we got a 21% performance gain or publishing time gain already. So there, and you still have the feature of dynamically publishing. So that's a very interesting one to explore. Then global publishing, and we were actually very surprised by these results, because in our test it showed that global publishing was slower than user publishing, and we were surprised. Now remember, these are the law of the large numbers, so we had, you know, these are 10 consecutive tests, all right? So this is not one hit that we got, and we had about, it took 20%, close to 20% longer to do a global publishing, and we had a talk with Microsoft on this as well, and we suspect that may be due to the fact that global publishing does more in the machine part of Windows, and that's maybe heavier in a certain way compared to the user. We haven't figured it out. And the other one that's astonishing is the fact that if we pre-publish the applications, which should basically all the information of the package is there, it still took 25% longer to process. So this doesn't make any sense. So based on this, I would not say go for global publishing, because the publishing times seem to get slower over time. And these are the actual numbers underneath. So we started with a 32-second average, and yeah, the bottom one is close to 40. Now, again, this is just a limited set of applications, of course, and every application behaves differently. So I strongly encourage you to do these tests yourself if you have a publishing environment. And cues Ryan's too for that. So the publishing is primarily on CPU, and you can see here, for example, when we removed Office from the publishing sequence and put it inside the image, that gave more room in the CPU. So obviously that also makes sense. Then there's also more, the whole publishing process is faster. We see that user publishing is generally faster than global publishing. But another interesting thing that we found out, because the results I showed you in three slides ago were based on a single user on a single device when the machine wasn't under load. But here you can see that actually the publishing time increases. So it's a very good idea, if publishing times are important to you, to also measure that when the machine is under load. Because they can, if you throw on 100 users, they could easily double the values depending on the starting point. So that's a very important one. And obviously, like we already saw, it pays to optimize your publishing. The example that we gave with either putting some applications into the image, still virtualized but statically in the image, or to remove some of those components if the application doesn't require it, that definitely pays. So wrapping this up, publishing impacts primarily on CPU, not so much on disk. We noticed that applications with a lot of integration points, like Office, but I'm sure some of your line of business applications have the same characteristics, they have a huge impact on the publishing time. The publishing times increase when the application or when the host is under load, and generally see that user publishing is faster than global. So Microsoft recommends to pre-add applications, although we cannot confirm the real performance gain, and we also saw that it didn't, you know, give any negative side effects. And we advise you to exclude those COM components, because the sequencer by default captures all the integration points. And if the application doesn't really need it for some reason, you might be better off if you disable them or move the applications into the image altogether.
So the next topic is going to be streaming. So when we are talking about streaming, we mean the protocol itself. So within AppFi, you have two options. You can stream by HTTP or HTTPS, but you can also stream by SMB. So in this topic, we're going to focus on the both HTTP and SMB streaming. So the capacity impact of the streaming protocol, you can see that by streaming over HTTP, it was 15%. So you lose 15% and it's compared to locally cached. So we initially thought that this was the best performing one.
Yeah.
So therefore it was also one of our defaults. But when testing SMB, we saw that the total capacity when streaming over SMB, it's only 7%. So it's way better compared to HTTP.
And interestingly, the configuration manager, for example, uses the HTTP streaming as a default from the distribution points.
So looking to the CPU utilization, you can clearly see here the locally cached is the best performing, and the HTTP streaming is the heaviest, and SMB streaming is right in the middle. And looking at the disk behavior, there is no real difference, it's the same. But if we look at the publishing times itself, you can also see that from the publishing time perspective, SMB streaming is faster. And it also, if you look at the end, like at the 125 users, it is not going very high. It's a little bit more stable if you compare it to HTTP, which is more beneficial. So the streaming protocol itself has a large impact on the capacity itself and also the publishing times. And we have seen that with SMB streaming, it's faster than the HTTP streaming way. So there's a big difference on CPU and not really on disk I/O. So we recommend from performance perspective, use SMB streaming because it is faster. But there may be other reasons why you are forced to use HTTP streaming. It can be like security, remote access, then you are forced to use HTTP. There was also one important note, because mentioned early in the beginning of the presentation, we have tested this on 2008 R2 combined with Windows 7. And as you may know, in Windows 2012 and Windows 8, the SMB protocol is higher, it's 3.0. So I done also a little research in my laptop lab about the impact of the SMB free streaming. So if you're interested in those results, you can go to my blog and look it up. But they are not part of this presentation and this research of Project VRC.
So how many sequencers do we have in the room that are actually closely related to sequencing? Okay, a couple of guys. Okay. So we also, what we now will be talking about is what we have called package architectures in a way, because there wasn't really like a terminology for it. And I don't mean that like in a 64-bit versus a 32-bit kind of architecture, but it's more that during the sequencing process, you have several options to configure your package. You can, for example, optimize it for streaming through feature block technology, where only the first part of the feature of the stream is delivered, and then the application is started, and then the rest is streamed in the background. Or you could, which is new in AppV5, do fault streaming, where basically there's no prioritization in the stream, and it basically grabs whatever it needs at a certain time. So we were interested to see in that particular scenario, does that make any difference in a performance or in a streaming scenario? And another one that has been on debate, I think, guess for years, because I remember it from the SoftBrit era when we had the asset drive, the Q drive, was whether or not you should install into what they now call the primary virtual application directory which was the ESA drive in SoftGrid, or you could install into the virtual file system. And Microsoft always recommended to do it into the primary virtual application directory because of performance reasons. Well, we have researched performance, so we thought it would be interesting to investigate that and find proof for that. But also because there are scenarios where that particular best practice doesn't work, right? So some applications don't work if you install it into a different directory. Or if you do, for example, connection groups and you need to merge two applications together, the primary virtual application directory doesn't get merged. So you're basically stuck with the virtual file system installation up until the upcoming releases of FV5. It is interesting to see if that impacts, that decision impacts your environment. So the starting point is a non-VFS or primary virtual application directory installed application. And we say, well, that's 100%. And then we went for the virtual file system installation. And we didn't find, I mean, again, it says 1%, but we kind of want to neglect that. So we couldn't find in our test setup any reason why you, from a performance perspective, don't want to go towards a VFS installation versus a PVAT installation. So if you can choose between, or if you're obligated to do one or the other, you know, from a performance aspect, it doesn't really matter. Then there's the migrated application. We also thought it was interesting to see if you're migrating from towards FV5 from an FV4 environment, you can convert the packages to the FV5 architecture. And it's interesting to see if those migrated applications, how they behave from a performance perspective. And there we actually saw an 8% improved capacity. So if you're using migrated applications, the capacity of the server is higher. Who has any idea what's causing this? Looking at the sequencers now. No thought? Well, what we think is because in the conversion process, because FV5 obviously doesn't support integration points like FV5 does. And in the conversion process, those are basically left out of the package. So in a migrated application, that never holds any of those configuration files. And as we've seen with, for example, Office, packages that have a lot of integration or a lot of integration points, perform, from a capacity perspective, perform less. So because none of the migrated applications have those, it's likely that they perform better. Now, does this mean that we advise you to sequence on FV4.6 and then use the converter to move everything to FV5? No, please don't do that. But at least you know that if you're moving with the converter towards the FV5 platform, it doesn't have any negative impact, at least. So the other one is the discussion between fault stream packages, which is new in FV5, and the feature block, which was kind of the traditional way of streaming. So Microsoft recommends to do fault streaming from a performance perspective. But again, the numbers are a little bit higher here. Again, there's no real difference. Okay, sure. And if there was any difference, it would be in favor of feature block optimization. So we would say, based on these results, the package architecture doesn't really have any impact on the capacity in our tests with our applications. So we didn't see any noticeable difference in CPU usage on the server in either of those scenarios. So we had all those packages sequenced in different ways. We didn't see any difference. There was a small I/O offset for a non-virtual file, so for the PVAT package, but it wasn't, you know, really something we want to base the best practice on. And the same goes for the fault stream package. So wrapping up the package architectures, we think that the package architecture doesn't have any noticeable difference in capacity, CPU, or publishing times. We did see some small deviations in write.io, but it wouldn't go as far as selecting one architecture over the other from a performance perspective, though there may be many other reasons why you still want to, you know, standardize on that. Obviously, less integration points, as in the migrated applications, will reduce CPU and write.io, as we've already confirmed earlier. So from a performance perspective, Microsoft recommends to use fault-streamed PVAD installed packages. We cannot confirm this performance gain, but we also can confirm that there's no degradation in performance. So you're basically free to choose. And again, like we already established at the publishing, if we want to disable some of those integration points, that definitely helps in the publishing performance. So, Ryan,
Yeah. Like Ment already mentioned in the beginning of the presentation, during TechEd in Houston in North America, Microsoft have released Hotfix 4. And this release was really focusing on performance. Microsoft have received a lot of feedback from customers that the performance was not always optimal, and therefore they decided to have a dedicated hotfix focusing on performance. And yeah, like you know, we are testing performance, so this was really an interesting topic for us to test this. But the thing was is that it was not really focusing on performance from a CPU perspective, so on capacity-wise. And you can also see it here in the chart that when applying Hotfix 4, you will not gain capacity, and when you will not lose capacity, it will stay the same. Which is, in my opinion, quite okay. But the focus was really on publishing performance. So in this specific scenario, we have removed Office from the publishing to really see the impact of the improvements within within the publishing. Because Office is really dominating the times, it was hard to see the real difference, and therefore we decided to go with free packages. So there are two things. First of all, the Hotfix 4 publishing is faster. But the second one is it's not rising as high as the SP2 one. So when you have a lot of load on your environment, it's not really going up. If you're going to look at it percentage-wise, we came out with 38%. So when applying Hotfix 4 on your environment, you will have 38% better publishing times in your environment, which is quite impressive, in my opinion. So wrapping this up, they released this hotfix focusing not really on capacity performance, but really on publishing performance. And there we also saw a big improvement. So our recommendation is to always apply Hotfix 4 in any publishing scenarios because it has a huge benefit.
Yeah, we saw the benefit already with the three applications. And what we've heard from the team as well is that the feedback they got from customers that had some, you know, pretty horrible publishing times with some specific applications, that they saw when the number of applications grows, that the publishing amount got also drastically lower. But this was as far as the scope of our test would go, obviously, so we could not confirm it any further. So basically, so now we close up the scenarios. Moving forward towards the key takeaways, I hope we've covered some scenarios for you. And the scenarios that you were interested in. So we think we've summarized the following best practices, which are generally come from our research. So regardless of APV5, if you have a .NET framework in your environment, which is very likely to be there, make sure that you optimize this to stay away from that CPU-specific bottleneck that we've identified in our research. We strongly encourage you to use the shared content store in the hosted desktop environment, specifically if you're doing stateless VDIs. It reduces the number of disk I/O, which is already very expensive in VDI environments, but also the network throughput from your streaming server. We think applications with a lot of integration points, COM objects and those kind of things, are CPU heavy to publish, so you could either disable them in the manifest file or move those packages towards the image, and be sure to investigate those publishing times if they're important to you, also under load. In streaming scenarios, SMB seems to be the faster protocol with lower resource impact. Of course, you can always use HTTP for certain reasons, but it's good to know that SMB is faster. We haven't found any proof of the package architecture having any relevant impact in the capacity or in the performance of the environment. And that's actually I'm very glad that we could finally close that chapter, because that has been in debate for years. And the last one is use APV5 Hotfix 4 in your environment if you're doing publishing. But actually, I think the biggest advice we want to give you is to test this for yourself, because this is based on our hardware, on our resources, with our applications. It may not reflect your configuration at all. All the machines that we've been having were optimized with the results from previous versions of the Project VRC results. So these VDIs were optimized to the max, didn't have any antivirus included, and all those kind of things that may, you know, even impact your environment even further. And for that, on the slide, you can see that there's a special event code that's available until the November 15th, where you can download a pro license, which is required if you want to do AppV customizations in the workload, of login VSI, full product for 50 users, so you can test that for yourself in 30 days. So you can at least, in the end, say, well, I actually love a good performance, and I'm doing everything I can to deliver that to my users. So that wraps up the session. So before I want to go into Q&A, I want to please ask you to fill out the evaluation that helps us give us your judgment, either by coming up to the stand or specifically online. And with that, I want to thank you for your attention and have a good trip home. I think we still have close to 15 minutes left. So if there are any questions, please. Anything specific? I'm sorry? Yes, you wanna? Yeah, sure. The slides are downloadable, by the way, from the Channel 9 site. Let me see, where is it? It was in the first scenario.
Here. Yeah, it's going to be there.
Yeah. So this is the .NET. You mean this one? Anything? Yes, this is, yeah. Yeah, you could, it depends on your deployment model. So in our environment, we created the image by hand. And so what we did is, when we opened up that image, we ran that script. If you're creating maybe your images automatically and you deploy .NET Framework as a package towards that that image, you could also include this probably in the end of that particular configuration. But it also takes some time, for the optimization to occur. So it will be hard to determine when it's actually finished. So you might want to put some sleeps into that command or something. So the question is, do you need to do that for every .NET framework? We only saw this with 4, because as it was a pre-requirement of the of AppV5. We did have previous version. We also have 3.5, I guess, on the environment, didn't we?
Yes, we have.
But we didn't see it with that particular. So you have to do it for 3.5 environments as well. Okay, we didn't saw any impact there. So, yeah, okay, good comment. Anything else? Yeah, question over there. Yeah, so the question is, what was the gain on 3.0? Yeah, Ryan, you can comment. Ryan did some preliminary testing. You want to comment on that?
I don't know results out of my head. It's has been well, but there are on my website, there was a not real higher percentage. But I really recommend then to go to my blog and look it up. I will give you the link afterwards.
Excellent.
Any other questions left?
Okay.
Then, well, thank you all for your time.
Thank you for your attention.